following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Hola, estamos
los Protomenes.
Está escuchando al
Nerdy Show.
Gracias.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. And this episode is extra special. It's a big ol' interview episode, because I'm here with Lauren.
Hello.
She's the station manager of Nerdy FM, and we're also here with Mark with a C.
Hello. I'm sometimes managing things.
On Nerdy FM.
No, in general.
In general, that's true. And we are going to play for you a listening party we did on Nerdy FM, where we played the entirety of Mark with a C's record, Unicorns Get More Bacon. Well, in this, we're not playing the whole thing. We're playing excerpts. But we thought you might want this DVD special feature of this track-by-track breakdown of the entire record. So when you're listening to it at home, which you obviously are, because clearly you went to markwithac.com and bought the record, you would have all the information you need to fully appreciate this oeuvre of Mark's.
Can you say that word again? You know the one.
Oeuvre.
It's a good word.
It's a good word.
I never want to hear that word spoken by anyone that is not Cap. Never again. Lauren, you try. Let's see if it rates.
Oeuvre.
That's pretty good, too. Okay, I amend it. I don't want to hear any people say
oeuvre
besides Cap and Lauren from here on out.
I have the edge. I'm British.
Well, that's why I said it's a tie. You know, Cap was the first person where I ever really noticed the word. And Lauren equaled it. So, society, you have your mission. Nobody's allowed to say the word but Cap and Lauren.
So, time's a-wasting. We got a lot of ground to cover. We got 12 succulent tracks of all new Mark with a C goodness.
Emphasis on suck.
Here we are. The podcast version of the Nerdy FM listening party. Of course, it should go without saying that if you go to nerdy.fm, you can hear all the latest and greatest nerd music in all genres, and sometimes we do listening parties with albums that are not yet to be released. So this is one such instance, and this is its archive, forever resting place here on Nerdy Show. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks for having me here in the Nerdy Show studios. I have to say, that fountain you installed is unreal.
Yeah, we have it set to silent mode right now.
But, which is even more impressive.
Yeah, it requires a lot of very complicated audio technology to record the sound and then play the sound back against the sound to nullify the sound completely. And then the dragon is pretty cool with its light-up eyes.
I think that it's unbelievable that I'm about to be interviewed by Brian Eno himself.
I think that's great, too. I cannot wait for him to get here.
All of the doorknobs in the Nerdy Show studio are actually made of sponge, which makes it very hard to leave whatever room you're in, especially if you've been playing with a fountain.
But it really makes you consider whether you actually want to leave or not. It takes a certain degree of dedication.
Yeah, you may find yourself in a house full of sponge doorknobs, was one of the original lines from the Talking Heads' Once in a Lifetime. I've taken precisely no inspiration from that whatsoever.
But I took very practical inspiration to install those in the studio right now. But
it's unbelievable. There's next to no air conditioning, but a fountain? Oh, we got that.
Humidity is really important. It keeps the vocal cords loose.
Nobody understands that more than me, and I won't give you a sob story about it, but as you age, you will find that your voice does not work the way that it once did, and you will have to take precaution upon precaution everywhere you go. And I'm actually, this is no joke, I'm actually in the market for scarves to keep my throat warm at all times. It's become a real problem over this winter playing some shows to sort of promote the idea that there is an album coming out. I've had to come up with interesting ways to keep my throat warm in drafty spaces while rehearsing and doing interviews.
Didn't you play outside recently as well?
That was the exact moment that I realized that I had to do it. That show was around 3.5 hours long, and it was 34 degrees outside, in the middle of the woods next to a lake with the wind blowing. I was happy to play the show. I'm always happy to play a show, but that was the moment that I went, okay, this whole drying of the vocal cords thing is no joke. So seriously, I'm looking into scarves, and I'm like, well, do I want to go full ascot? Because that means I've really got to get a whole different collection of shirts. You guys giggle, but this is the most honest thing I've said so far.
Well, I'm just excited about how now that we have this call to action here, you're going to probably get a lot of homemade scarves at your shows now. It's going to be like everybody's going to throw scarves up on the stage instead of, say, undergarments. You're going to just get a deluge of scarves, and I think everyone, you know, should really realize that if you want to keep Mark with a C singing for you, then at least one person a show needs to bring a scarf to give to him at all respective Mark with a C live performances.
Yeah, it's basically a formula of a lot of water. I mean, you have to stay hydrated, scarves, and painkillers. So ultimately, it's going to just look like a freaking Aerosmith concert. Just a lot of liquid scarves and drugs.
And that's why we're here to talk about Unicorns Get More Bacon. Mark, what number studio album is this for you?
I don't know. I was trying to figure it out before I got here. I don't know. There's so many different ways to calculate it, because there's covers records, live records, and I don't know.
I looked at your Wikipedia page to try to get a concise overview, because sometimes people separate it between studio albums and live albums, and I looked at it. It wasn't. Someone get on that, please. And I just said, fuck it, and decided that I'd ask you, and you don't know either, so.
No, I try not to think too hard about it. I just keep making. But this is a rather good one in that list, I would say. But I don't know what number it is. That's really for someone else to figure out. And really, I do echo Cap's request that someone clean up my Wikipedia page. There's far more information about me than the rather dated stuff for whoever set that one up.
Scarves, fix the Wikipedia page. We got a lot of call to action so far, not a lot of music. So let's get things started. With Unicorns Get More Bacon, was there anything different about this record when you started the songwriting process?
Yes. I just wanted to make a fun record, and the record that I started to make is a very different one that I ended up with. Initially, I had the idea that this would be a double album. I wanted to just try a hint of everything that I do, throw it all against the wall and try to sort of arrange it in a schizophrenic white album style. And after about a month or so of working on it, I just found that I didn't find any common thread in the schizophrenic manner of working. So instead, I culled it down to around 12 songs that I thought were all strong enough to be singles if I were going to be a singles act. All songs that could work on their own as good tunes and not worry about a concept, not worry so much about presentation, just make an album full of good songs. Had it been a double album, there would have been a lot more touchy, oh, that's weird, or an audio experiment or something, and those got left by the wayside for a really direct record instead. But I was trying all kinds of new things.
Wow, okay, so how much leftovers are there to the Unicorn Bacon feast of this record?
I will not tell you that. I don't have any intention of doing much with that stuff right now, but there's some stuff left over. There always is, and I'm not the most forthcoming guy sometimes. I seem like I am, but I'm really not. And I would say that there's a chance that some of it has already been released under a name that's not mine. You are able to stumble upon it right this second, if one were to try to decode. That is a possibility. I'm not saying that that's what happened.
Right.
Just a possibility.
Okay, pretty mysterious. I like it.
No, we're here to talk about the 12 songs on Unicorns Get More Bacon.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the title track then. Unicorns Get More Bacon. And it's a complicated track, because at face value, it's all fun and games, but really it opens a pretty complex dialogue about the relationship between an artist and audience.
Mm-hmm. I wrote the song in about 10 minutes at my kitchen table while I was watching the bunnies hop, because they need X amount of exercise per day.
And famously, you now own bunnies.
Yes, so this is my second wave of bunnies, but these are very good bunnies. There's Alice Cooper and Tammy Faye Baker, and they're fantastic bunnies. And some of my favorite living beings. My daughter had brought something home from school, which was something that she had to make for science class. It was an illustration where she'd spelled out Unicorns Get More Bacon with a periodic table. And I just thought it was a really cool picture. I shared it on Facebook. Everybody said, well, that's an album cover. And I couldn't disagree. That's clearly an album cover. So the album was just going to be called Unicorns Get More Bacon because that was going to be the biggest word on the cover, you know, the biggest sentence. And then I thought, man, I really should have a song under that name. So that was my first attempt at it. But there were ideas sprinkled through it that I'd had for years. A lot of people think, well, why should I support X musician? Because they should be doing this for fun. This should just be a hobby and you should hang on to your dreams and only work on them nights and weekends. And well, why should I support them? They just came from backstage. And really, even in people that are packing arenas, they don't realize that their backstage is often like the sweaty sports dressing room. There's very little glamorous until a spotlight hits you and people look at you and decide that there's a bit of glamour to what you do. But it's actually one of the stinkiest professions you can be in. And that's why you tend to walk away remembering the one person that didn't like it. Because you're like, man, if you only knew what I had to do to try to get here just for quote-unquote exposure, just so you'll hear the song, and then you're going to go, nah, I'm really into music, but I don't like the way you've arranged the same 12 notes we're all using. That's tough. So Unicorns Get More Bacon was just the idea of the relationship between artist and audience, and that sometimes the audience is far more comfortable than the performer. It is not a criticism of the audience.
No.
No, it's absolutely not. It's just, can we all agree to have a good time? There's far too many people that are criticizing their audience for not getting them. And I don't feel that way at all. I'm just happy. I'm thrilled you're listening. And I make that really clear in the tune with...
You do, yeah.
You know, at this point in my career, I'm surprised there's an audience. And those are true. I'm happy we're taking this journey together. But I want, off the bat, for us to just decide we're going to have a good time.
The first half of the album especially features a lot of commentary about social issues, but kind of weird social issues, like celebutants, overuse of the word game, public failure. Was that intentional structuring of the record?
No, they just ended up flowing into each other really, really well. But when I was done with what ended up being side one, a new theme sort of appeared on the record for me, which I'll save for a little bit later. Was it intentional to write about all those subjects? Yeah, absolutely. I had things that I wanted to say, and a lot of it came from abstaining from speaking on social media unless I had something to promote, like a show, or I made a new song and maybe you'll like it. I was abstaining from sharing my opinions with the world so I'd have something to say on the records.
Well, enough of us talking. If you haven't heard this yet, you're probably wondering what it sounds like. The first track, Unicorns Get More Bacon, it does actually have a music video. Which you should totally check out. So we're going to play that first track, and when we get back, we'll adventure onward into the rest of the album.
Hello, it's nice to be here. I've been pacing backstage. That's actually a lie, there is no backstage. But I made up these songs, and I chose to play them here. I can only hope you like them. How am I doing so far? See, my songs are like my kids. I have a fuck ton of them. And some are kind of good, others are just assholes. We used to clap and cheer when people would sing up here. And I'm not content to do this while you look at your cell phone. They said an artist needs a patron, and unicorns get more bacon, but they cheer the loudest for what I like least. So I thought that it would be fun to get you on my side up front, and what I gotta know is, are you with me? Well, it's still good to be here, no matter your response. Wife, a dog, a daughter, and two bunnies. don't you think?
The second track is called Celebutantes, and in the song, you said if you made examples of present-day celebutantes, the references wouldn't age too well. Totally right. That was a very good point to make. This song is going to outlast this specific discussion. But here, in late February 2016, we could in fact document specific celebutantes that really get your goat.
But I don't think I could name them.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's just the idea that I tend to tune out when someone's talking about someone who said something controversial on Twitter or in an interview, and then I go, okay, well, what do they do? And they say, well, you know, I don't really know, and then I just tune out. I couldn't care less. They're ultimately average people with sponsorship deals.
Right.
They're really just there to sell me products. It's a lot like a controversial opinion in a commercial. So I just kind of tune out when they've got something to say about Hillary Clinton, you know?
Right, right.
I just couldn't care less. But you're so inundated with it that it's sometimes hard to tell who's actually making art and who's not. For example, a very controversial statement that I could make is I'm more of a fan of Kanye West as a dude than as a musician. I do think he's made some really good songs, but right as he was feverishly working on this album that by the time you're hearing this, this will be old news, The Life of Pablo, he stopped working on it because he had just seen Tron. And he just kind of went on about, I'm so hype right now. You know the end of Tron? When everything light up? That's dope! Or something like that. And I went, that is so cool! I want to hang out with that guy who's like, yeah, the whole world's waiting for my album, but man, I want to watch Tron.
He's so ridiculous.
But at the same time, he's making art, so I kind of care.
Right.
But if you're telling me what, I don't know, let's say a Kardashian thinks about lipstick, it's the same as you telling me what your cousin in Vermont thinks about lipstick, and there's really no reason for me to know.
I like the part in the song where you talk about make your time here meaningful. There are so many people that aren't, and it's kind of a nice reminder of all this false celebrity, and really there are better things to be doing with your life than fawning over these people.
Thank you for getting that out of the tune. It's definitely one of the attitudes I hoped that people would get from the song. Your time on Earth is limited, and we don't all get the chance to be David Bowie, but maybe we could all be Peter Schilling. You know, maybe we could all be just the guy who wrote the German Major Tom song. And, you know, I don't know what Peter Schilling's up to. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what his opinion on anything is. But I'll always have that Major Tom song. He left an impression on the world. He made me happy for 4 minutes.
Which is something we could all hope for ourselves if we don't push it farther. And so much better to make something that makes someone happy rather than to be essentially disposable. That statistic about like tweeting X number of selfies a day, I mean, that's something that people do. Is there like a rule book? Did you look at the at this, like the averages? Is there a format here? Is there a formula?
No, on that part of the song, I had to decide to put more lyrics or a solo. So I went for more lyrics. So off the top of my head, I'm like, if I were celebutant, what would I be doing right now? Trying to appear on the Nerdist, taking a bunch of selfies so that you wouldn't notice the product placement selfies. And, you know, I was just imagining what I would be doing right then if I were a celebutant. it's not in first person or third person that way, but that's where it came from. But we're in a period where hundreds, thousands of years from now, all of our history is going to be lost. There's just no getting around it. As technological upgrades continue, we will have hard drives that will be encrypted because we're worried about our dick pics getting leaked, and they will be password protected, and then we're going to have to assume that these hard drives that's in a cloud is all going to work 2,000 years from now, and that someone's going to remember. Like, if you had to crack open Windows 3.1 right now, cap, could you do it? Then multiply that by 2,000 years and trying to run one of these operating systems where everybody's living only for how they will appear digitally. There's very little being left behind. There's very little physical art being left behind. As we continue to make literature, like there's a guy on Amazon who constantly makes books about butt porn, but they've got these great, great titles like Banged in the Butt by My Own Butt. And this thing's gone on to have like seven, wow, eight sequels, like Banged in My Butt from the Butt from the book where I was banged in my butt. Like, it goes on. It's Buttception. And there is not a single printed copy of this anywhere. It is only an ebook. And when all of the technology used to look at these things is incomplete, we will not have a record of how funny we thought butt jokes were in 2015 and 2016. So I think we could all, I mean, I'm not telling anyone what to do here, but try to make something that will last, and you're going to have to think a little hard to do it.
I think that the field of digital anthropology is going to be pretty fascinating. I mean, it already kind of is. There's people, you know, already kind of doing that out of necessity, like you were mentioning with Windows 3.1, because if you had a CD or a floppy disk to install it and you had the reader to install it with, I'm good on that so far. But if I wanted to have a computer to read that, it would have to have older machinery inside because a newer machine couldn't, in fact, run it.
Right.
There's so many degrees of problems with that. But then if you get all those tools, then you can dig deeper into the layers. This is a whole separate discussion than we're talking about unicorns get more bacon.
No, it's actually a huge part of Celebutantes and the fact that Lauren brought up of doing something. It's also trying to make sure that you're making something that can last, and that's a really dicey proposition because it's very, very easy to get a reaction right now going to a computer and getting the instant gratification. Making something that has a sliver of a chance of being discovered later is much tougher, and it's the road less traveled right now. And it's one of the reasons that I'm so in favor of protecting the old guard, the old school, the old ways of doing things.
And you, and I assume this includes making physical artwork like vinyl records.
For example, yes, but also maybe trying to work on an attitude that will last.
It's kind of what runs through the whole album, really, is you saying, I'm here doing something that's meaningful to me, you should all be doing something meaningful to you, live life to the fullest. It's not just this song, there's many songs on the album that kind of have that message.
We should just have Lauren just review the album because she's hitting all these points in ways far more eloquent than my long-winded examples.
I've just listened to this album repeatedly for about a week. The next song on the album is Ethics and Gaming, and I'll be honest, I wasn't really sure where you were going to go with this when I first saw the title. So I was quite surprised when I actually listened to the song.
Good. I'm glad you liked it. I was kind of scared to name the song that.
To skirt around the issue of a joke about Gamergate.
It wasn't a joke. Every interview I've done has asked me, does this have anything to do with a movement whose initial is GG? And my answer is no, but if the shoe fits. The good part about the song is, though it is rather direct, it's also malleable. If you're using the word game, it can be applied, period. It could mean a board game, it could mean pickup artists, anything. And ultimately, if you're using the word game and an argument is sprung up from it, then the object of having an argument is to win it. So now you've created a brand new game. Maybe if we took the game away, there wouldn't be anything to argue about. And the argument couldn't exist. I think that my feelings on the subject are much more eloquently sung in the song, but if I had to boil it down to three words, it'd be pick your battles.
It's a complicated conversation. On the one hand, it seems like a simple thing of when you use the word game to say that you're at least moderately good in something, that annoys you, Mark with a C.
I didn't say it annoys me.
No?
I'm not crazy about the word being so liberally applied, because it turns things that don't need to be into a competition.
How often does this happen? Because I really hadn't even thought about it until listening to the song.
Watch your social media feed and notice. Now that I've brought it up for you, listen in conversations. Realize how often you're saying it. You will be surprised at how pervasive it is. I, too, since writing and recording the song, have caught myself saying it and going, no, I don't want to do this because what I'm doing ultimately is marginalizing others by saying I'm better than others at this particular thing. Maybe it's the way I'm wearing pants that day or what have you, but game being so liberally applied, it's a dangerous place to be when we're in an era of everybody gets a trophy just for showing up.
It was a song that when I actually listened to it, it was a song where I actually sat back and I could think, I know people that are like this, and it made me think about the way I interact with them. It was something I'd never noticed per se, but it is something that now that you've written this song, I see more in the world, and it's a song I can really relate to more than maybe any other song you've written so far.
Wow, I've written a lot of songs, so thank you.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
That makes me feel better because, again, putting the words ethics and in and gaming together this year is a very dangerous proposition. So hearing any compliment, any sort of affirmation of being on the right track is welcome.
Hopefully it's one of those songs where people will hear it and they'll think, 2016, new year, let's do things a little bit differently, because last year, there were tough times, and the start of this year wasn't brilliant, but it's maybe a chance for people to look differently at life.
We had an interestingly shitty beginning of 2016, but I think that it was a blessing in a way that it reminded us that the time is short and that there are bigger fish to fry than whatever we're arguing about.
Following ethics in gaming, there's the track Epic Fail. Failure is important because it's through failure that you get better. What, if I may ask, were some memorable times that you've quote-unquote failed in public?
I think there's the very famous one where my body refused to work properly at Nerdapalooza, and I was in the middle of the song Stairway to Rudolph, and a mixture of bad staging and a weird position for me to be standing in and a bunch of cables that were just haphazardly under my feet. And my kneecap popped out of socket while I was on stage. And this was after just a couple of people had just shown up from some Harry Potter convention going, well, we just paid $30 just to come see you. Well, this is the middle of the second song. I have to continue playing. Well, there were no monitors. I couldn't get my guitar back in tune. I had to keep playing for those people, though I desperately needed to go to the emergency room because I'm not going to say, screw you and your $30. So I succeeded by getting on with it. I failed because the show was awful.
Now, see, I thought you were going to say that, but because this comes up because you beat yourself up over this quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I always look to that story as Mark with a C will do anything for his fans. He will even put himself in great physical danger just to do a show that he believes needs to get done. I don't see it as a failing at all.
But Nerdapalooza, the final day, wasn't even over before certain journalists who didn't cover me otherwise had ran with the story and started posting it and enjoying my public failure.
I did not know that, actually.
So you kind of have to make peace with you're just going to fail in public. This is the culture right now. People love failure on a level that I've never seen, and there's some German word that people always use for it that I can't say. I just can't pronounce it. Schadenfreude, or I still can't say it correctly.
You know, I'm not good at saying it aloud myself.
And I'll tell you, if I could, that would have been the name of the song instead of Epic Fail. But ultimately, the song was only a verse and a chorus on the demo. Just sort of an idea I had. I jotted it down and thought, well, if I have other ideas for it in the future, I'll work on it. On the day that I began recording Unicorns Get More Bacon in earnest, the Ashley Madison leak went public, and I watched friends that I had respected continually posting, you know, the animated GIFs or GIFs, depending on where you stand on the pronunciation of Michael Jackson eating popcorn. They were very excited to watch people fail in public, and I realized I didn't like most of the people I knew. because I thought, God, what a horrible thing. Now, it doesn't affect me at all, the Ashley Madison hack, but that's not to say that some other hack or leak won't happen, and something that I would like to keep clandestine or not in view of the public won't be leaked at some point in time. It could be any one of us. Every single one of us has something to hide. So that was the changing of the guard. It was a reminder of right now, wear everything on your sleeve. Live everything in a manner that you would be fine with your grandmother and your great-grandchildren knowing, because it will become public at some point.
Let's go to the next song, Make You Better, which is considerably less clear, unless the song is definitively about a rabbit with syphilis.
It is.
It is.
It is about two rabbits with syphilis, as a matter of fact. As we mentioned earlier, I've got these two bunnies. They're dwarf Otos, and they're actually an endangered breed. I was at a pet store, and I had no intention of buying rabbits that day. I just love rabbits. And there was a lady there who wanted to buy just one of these two rabbits who were twin sisters. She was buying it for her teenage daughter, and her daughter was texting away on the cell phone and going, whatever, just buy the rabbits. And the mom's going, oh, well, will you hold them? She's like, I'm not going to hold them. So if rabbits that are bonded are separated, they will actually die. They will die from heartbreak. Heartbreak is heart attack central for a rabbit. After viewing this, I realized that if I didn't swoop in and buy them right then, I was basically sending one to a death march of a lack of caring and the other one to a death march of heartbreak because her sister disappeared and she was lonely and would just not eat and die. She'd wither and die. So I could rescue them or always have it on my conscience that I didn't. Now, mind you, I don't step foot in pet stores that sell rabbits since this, but I brought them home immediately. And after having them for about a month, though they were very, very tiny and their organs were not completely developed, they started getting sores on their face. And I was concerned, so I took them to the vet. The vet took one look at them and went, yep, syphilis. I'm like, how is that even possible? They're both girls. They definitely have not been active in a way that I think that is spread. They said, no, it's just it's something that's sort of inherent in their breed. Like, it's been there for years and years and years, and it kills off most of them, and that's why they're endangered. Well, I was at this crossroads of, I can either let them die from syphilis, or we can give them penicillin. And penicillin is toxic to rabbits. So the choice was, do they die of syphilis or do they die from the cure, possibly? So I had to sit, and for about 2 weeks, that's all me and my wife did. We took shifts sitting near the rabbits for any sign of toxic shock and just watching them being miserable. And you couldn't tell if they were miserable because of the syphilis or the medicine. But ultimately, how much does it suck to have an STD and not even get to have sex? And they don't understand that. They're just cute little fluff balls that bring joy into the world. So while I was watching them, I made up the song.
That was not the answer I expected. That is an extremely literal song.
That was just not what I thought you were going to tell us at all. My mind is blown right now.
I'm sorry if that broke your hearts, guys. You asked, so.
I'm glad to know it. I learned things about rabbits. And syphilis?
It's really common in, sort of the breeding mills for them. If the stud or whatever that comes in has it, like, it's just going to get transferred right to the babies.
Bummer. That sucks. Thank you for saving these rabbits from that awful-sounding situation.
They're adorable as hell. I mean, you can't look at them and imagine them anywhere but somewhere happy and safe, you know? Even if you don't like rabbits, I'm actually allergic to them. I'm deathly allergic to them, and
wow.
I don't care. I had to save them. They were literally on a death march.
Mark with a C, everybody. He's a good man.
I've got the CD next to me with the picture of the two bunnies on the back just staring cutely at me, and my heart's just breaking looking at it now.
Those Lisa Frank bunnies, they have syphilis.
Had
syphilis.
Had. They're syphilis free.
You should definitely question all future Lisa Frank styled animals in the future. The next track on the record is called Anything But Plain.
Am I right in thinking that this one is inspired by your wife, Mark?
Yes, you'd be completely correct in that assumption. I will point out it was written before she was my wife, but it still applies now that she is my wife.
Oh, I thought this did sound like the older style of Mark with a C, but whenever you write a song that's inspired by your wife, they always just sound filled with so much love. They must be just so easy for you to write.
They are, and I have to actively not write as many songs about my wife as I would like to, because I think it would be incredibly one-trick pony of me. But sure, I could just write songs about her all the live long day and think nothing much of it, but that was actually one of the very first that I wrote about her, and she had just gotten home from work, and she was getting out of her work clothes and into something a little more comfortable, and had walked into the room with a bowl of popcorn and went, great, I have an idea here. And that was that. But it was a written around the time of the Life So Hard album about 10 years ago, and I could just never get an arrangement that I really liked. I could never find the right key for it. There was always a couple of verses that were just a little janky, and I never had an arrangement that I liked until now. So I thought, hey, what a great time to put it out. Now that it's done.
It's quite old. It's at least as old as 2009.
Yeah, it appeared numerous places. It appeared on the soundtrack to music from Sex Times 3 because the people who were putting that play together that sort of revolved around my music, they really liked that song. They'd heard me sort of workshopping it around the time of Life So Hard, and they wanted it used in the play. So I had to kind of come up with a dummy version to use on the soundtrack. But I still wasn't terribly happy with it. And now I really like it. And the guitar part in the beginning is harder than it sounds. It sounds like just simple cowboy chords, but it's such a tight squeeze to get your fingers where they need to be and then pulling off and using some open chords without accidentally muting them with letting other fingers rest on what are supposed to be the open strings. It's actually taken me 10 years to think I might be able to get it right most times, and I can never remember the words on stage. It's one of the few songs you'll see me almost always have a cheat sheet for. Because there've been like 17 verses for the songs over the years. Actually, at the last show I played it at in January, I accidentally sang one of the verses from 2006 that I'd completely forgotten, but it just, bam, right back on the radar for some reason. And okay, so know that any version you hear of Anything But Plain is always a template for what it might be. It's sort of like Freebird. You know that you're going to get something that sounds like Freebird, but that guitar jam can go in any direction. Well, I think my song's better. It's Freebird for lovers.
So the next track on the record is, if you have the vinyl, the final track on side A. It's called I Hate This Song. And I was looking at the credits to the song, and it said that Glitch, one of the co-hosts on Wicked Anime, one of the podcasts here on the Nerdy Show Network, and also bartender at the Geekeasy, he is somehow responsible for a narrative that happens in the middle of the track.
Yes.
What's the story there?
Years ago, I had this idea for having a song that just came out of the gate with talking about how much I hate the song. Like, you haven't heard any of the song yet, but it's just letting you know up front, man, I hate this song. But I could never come up with anything else for it. It was just an idea. Didn't even have chords. I did a series of shows at the Geekeasy mid-2015. The idea was it was a monthly residency where I could never repeat a song. The set list would always change, so if you'd come one month, the next month, I couldn't repeat any of those songs and so on and so forth. But also, with Anything Goes, we had a point in the middle where we had a bucket called the R. Kelly Bucket of Glory. And throughout the show, people would, they'd have 3x5 index cards where they could write suggestions for song subjects that they would like to see me do. I would then pick around 5 of these 3x5 index cards before my last tunes, and we'd decide through audience vote what the winning subject would be. I try to be nice to everybody, but most of these were dreadful. This was just a concept that failed unequivocally. I don't remember what the other contenders that night were, but they were pretty short. One was like, write a song about an octopus. And I'm like, sorry, we already have Squiddy, guys. Like, it's just not going to work. And the final card that I pulled was very similar to what you hear in the middle of I Hate This Song, completely written out, and then a little note on the back going, and you have to say all of these words in this order. It was just, he took up every single minutia of space to write about the sensation that will be described in the song. Now, I ended up paraphrasing it in the recorded version, But the next week, I came back and performed the song, and nobody knew that I was going to be performing that song because it began as, I hate this song. And you get a little while into it, and you realize why I absolutely hate the song. But I had made a promise to that audience that no matter what the winner is, it would be immortalized in song format, and that's exactly what happened, and I'm so sorry.
Couldn't get a better intro to it than that. Here's the final track of the A-side of the album, I Hate This Song.
I hate this song. Relief, am I talking about? Ladies and gentlemen of the People's Republic of Mark with a C, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that weird thing when you really have to go, you know? But it's not that bad, and you're like, I can totally wait until I get home. My bladder's like the hammer of Thor. I'm the best around. Nothing's ever gonna keep me down. I am a man that will fight for your honor. I am the master and or mistress of my domain, possibly both, depending on the day. So as you go home, the closer you get, the worse it starts to feel, and you're starting to think that you're about to burst. So you're reaching in your pocket and you're looking for your keys, and you run to the bathroom. You're totally feeling like you're not gonna make it, and you start struggling with your zipper and your thigh high and your boots until you say, screw it! You pull down your pants or your skirt or your whatever, and you sit down, and finally, sweet relief.
1, 2, 3, 4!
We hate this song. We hate this song. I hate this song so much that you'll be left in disbelief. When it's finally over, ooh, that's sweet relief. I really hate this song.
I do hate the song.
Okay.
Portions
of it.
Portions.
That rant happened to me coming home from work the other day. And it was really funny as I'm kind of walking down the hallway to my flat. That whole rant just popped into my head. And I ended up spending the rest of the night singing the I Hate This Song verses repeatedly.
Wow. It's prophetic. You're living out the songs I wrote. It's like Hank Williams Jr.'s family tradition. I'm sorry. Because it's not a pleasant feeling. I mean, we've all been there.
It's just really weird to now associate that feeling with Mark with a C.
You'll always equate me with having to use the loo, as they would say where you live, right? Do people say the loo yeah. over there?
Yeah, it's quite often said here, yes.
That's so much classier than, I gotta take a leak, or I gotta drain the snake, or whatever you might hear in the U.S. The loo is just so classy. In comparison, if I had to choose between I got to go use the Wiz Palace or the loo.
Wiz Palace. That's where Wiz Khalifa lives, I think.
He has a lot of connections in the entertainment industry, and I decline to comment.
All right. All right. So this is the point where if you're listening to it on a vinyl record, you would flip it over.
We'll wait. You know, that's how podcasts work, right? That they get them on a shellacked piece of wax and drop the needle on their Crosley. And
I'm sure someone's done it. Someone's done a podcast recorded to vinyl. If they have, please contact us and let me know. I'm curious, at least morbidly curious.
I normally don't call someone a hipster, but in that case, I would make the exception. Got your podcast on vinyl. Wow. Hold on, guys. I got to go write a song.
And it's a podcast about craft beers.
Oh, snap. And then Each copy has some of the beard trimmings embedded in the wax.
Yep, that's the stuff right there.
Mumford and Sons, if you're listening.
I'm pretty sure you could summon some kind of a demon with a spell like that.
It's like the ghost of the Black Parade from My Chemical Romance shows up. I'll grant you 3 wishes, but they all must be purchasable from Hot Topic.
So choosing a place to break for the record, why did you choose these 2 songs, I Hate This Song and the forthcoming track, Texas Myron?
Well, for 2 reasons. One, I was out of space on side 1, so I had to move on to another side.
Right.
Second reason is if I were to have gone the route of, say, naming the sides, side B would be the show side, and side A would be the tell side. Side A is very direct. Sure, you can listen to them, and you are more than welcome to glean whatever meaning you'd like out of any of those songs and apply them to your life in whatever way that you deem fit. That's the beauty of art. Once I've sang it and released it to you, you're free to interpret it however you'd like. Side B is, for the most part, much easier to glom your own meaning onto rather than me shoving something down your throat.
Well, Mark, what are we going to do tonight? We're talking about these songs. How deep can we go? How deep are you comfortable going with explaining the show side?
Pretty comfortable. I mean, you know, we have warm towels here by the fountain. We're in the hot tub wearing less than nothing. I mean, we've actually left portions of our skin behind because it's so scalding hot. I think I will plumb further depths with you than I would on average.
Beautiful.
Lauren, if you could only be in this hot tub with us.
I know. I'm so gutted. I'm halfway around the world.
We would trade all of our secrets over a strange tangerine liqueur. It would be much like I envision the Decemberists' backstage pre-show rituals to be.
Well, since we're all mellowed out on that particular citrus liqueur, let's talk about the first track of Side B, Texas Myron. Let's go deep. It's a beautiful song.
Thank you.
It has like vaguely narrative properties to it, but I'm not sure what it's about specifically, if anything.
I didn't have a title for it. It had like 6 different working titles, and there's a secret but not secret place where really big Mark with a C fans congregate on Facebook called the Mark with a C Advisory Board, and I actually put up a rough mix of it one night and said, hey, what should I call this song? And someone who got that the song was a style parody recommended the title, and he furthered the style parody. Now, if you're not familiar with this group, achingly familiar with this group, you would never get that it's a style parody, but it's actually my attempt at writing almost all of Guided by Voice's power pop tunes. Now, that's the musical style of it.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics, you're free to glom whatever you'd like onto it, but often I'll pick just a locale and just go with it. What could be happening in that state at that time or one individual? I mean, how many times do you go to the mall or a shopping plaza or a concert and you see all these people and you wonder what they do in their day-to-day lives? It's sort of like picking one random person in Texas and what they're dealing with that day. In this case, I would imagine that someone in Texas probably was in the middle of having their secrets revealed. Maybe they were from Texas and they needed to go home to escape the shame. That could be one interpretation. Or it could be somebody who was a worker on the Liberty Bell, but had lost a lot of friends over the years trying to hide the fact they were the descendants of those who cracked it. They were persona non grata in that portion of Texas, maybe. Those are a couple of meanings one could apply to it. I have a very direct story in my head, but I don't think it would be much fun for anybody else.
It's interesting that you said it was it's a Guided by Voices style parody. I'm only ever so loosely familiar with them, and I especially don't know the earlier Guided by Voices material, which I presume this is more along the lines of?
Sort of a cross between the TVT material with elements of some of the more creamy power pop songs on B-1000.
I was actually curious what you were listening to during the majority of the songwriting for this record, because after several listens to it, I realize that it has way more dream pop elements to it, like late 80s, early 90s, the Ocean Blue, Sire Records, Just Say samplers kind of vibe to it than any of your other work.
probably still very stuck on Robin Hitchcock at the time that I was writing this. I just love Robin Hitchcock and all of his eras, but the last few records have been really heavily inspired by Robin Hitchcock's style of production, not so much actually style of songwriting. In popular music, there's definite influence from his era where he fronted the Soft Boys. On side two of Exactly Where I Am, I mean, once you've heard it, you can never unhear it. It was very inspired by his latter-day folkier material. And I was really deep into his late 80s, early 90s work with his band Robin Hitchcock and the Egyptians. Now, it would also help to answer your question that you knew that I have this Spotify playlist that I really love where I've looked up playlists for modern rock radio stations through the years, and every time I find their Hot 30 for that month or that week, I just drag and drop the songs over into this playlist and just put it on random all the time, and it's my preferred music to wake up to. So I could be hearing Cure B-sides or Soundgarden's Black Hole Sun, but that's usually the first thing I'm hearing as I wake up, and it feels like home. You know, it feels like the stuff that I was listening to on 91X growing up in San Diego, which is a good thing for you to know because there's something I'll tell you later on about the record.
Cool. Well, then now we're moving on to the Ballad of Dick Steele.
Dick Steele was a steel driving man.
He's also the guy who runs Nerdy Karaoke at the Geekeasy in Orlando, Florida.
Or that's at least true.
That's his handle anyway.
Mm-hmm. Another Anything Goes show.
Yeah.
The subject that won the audience voting was a song called The Ballad of Dick Steele. And later I found that it was put in the box by Dick Steele. But I realized to the average listener who doesn't frequent karaoke in the back of a comic book shop in Orlando, which is just this huge cultural melting pot, anybody who's in Orlando and going, ah, there's nothing to do, you're just wrong.
Yeah, for very many reasons, but yeah.
There's just so much. It's almost impossible to find quiet here. But I had to come up with a way to describe Dick Steele. So I asked him, like, look, man, I've seen you around. We've done shows together. We're on good terms, but I don't actually know a thing about you. So I handed him back the 3x5 index card and said, just write some facts about yourself. And I built a song out of the facts that he gave me. And he swears that everything in the song's true. I don't know that it actually is. But I do know that before I really knew of him as an entity, that I found that anytime I would mention his name, everybody would stop. The audiences would all stop listening to me, applauding, laughing, and just start chanting, Dick, Dick, Dick. It's something that's just, I don't know how to describe it. It's a phenomenon that exists in one zip code. So I thought that was the most important thing, because ultimately, if you go on the facts listed, Dick Steele is not a politician. Dick Steele is not enacting any major change in the world, but he's letting people sing, and they're happy when they do it, and people are so excited by his presence that they chant his name whenever he enters a room. That's worth being immortalized, I'd say.
Absolutely, and it's a hell of a song. As tall tale songs go, I mean, he says it's all true. I'm going to take him for his word at that. It's quite the anthem.
Hey, Lauren, since, as far as I know, you have never met Dick Steele, what were your impressions when you heard the song, not knowing him or the subject matter?
I knew of him through Nerdfest. That was the only thing I knew. I'd seen him host a couple of times before a few people's sets. So listening to the song for the first time, it was quite funny because it made me think of old TV and movie themes for like superheroes who had, you know, these themes where it told you everything that was amazing about them within 3 minutes of music. So having this where he's into Pokemon and things like that, it was easy to imagine that could be anybody that was listening to that song. They could apply that to themselves.
Yeah.
And with the circle of our listeners and your fans, Dick Steele could be anybody. It's like the ultimate superhero name, but he's a real guy at the same time, which is quite funny.
I have to say, you are the first person to say to me the words that make me believe that you completely get it. Because locally, a lot of folks were asking me, why are you doing this song on your record? Like, it works live here, but who's going to know? say, in Poughkeepsie, who Dick Steele is. And I went, no, that's the beauty of it. Like, nothing negative about Dick Steele, but when it comes down to it, he's just a dude, you know? And why shouldn't just a dude have a song? Why shouldn't he have a song celebrating the every nerd?
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is, there's that kind of classic Mark with the C joke of getting a crowd to chant Dick repeatedly. That also works for
the old standbys.
When all else fails, talk about dicks for like 45 minutes and you get a successful show.
I think Lauren brings up a very good point, because if I didn't know that Dick Steele was a person, I might just think that this was all made up and there's nothing about the stories, though they range from fantastic to mundane, that suggests that they're either fact or fiction. They exist in an in-between place.
I don't actually know how he pissed off Lou Ferrigno, and I've been meaning to ask.
I imagine it's not hard to do.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty of people have done it. I want to know the ins and outs of that. And people keep talking about it in the early reviews. Like, this is one of the tracks that they keep pointing at. Like, but this is the real highlight. And I'm like, really? I mean, it's cool, but...
The next track is Where's My Giant Robot? And much like the ballad of Dick Steele and the midsection of I Hate This Song, it was kind of user-contributed or inspired to a degree.
Yes. You should always listen to your audience. Pete Townsend told this great story about how The Who made that connection with their audience, where I think he used the name Bill. You know, you see Bill at The Who show, and you go, Bill's wearing a really sharp shirt. So the next week, instead of complimenting Bill on the shirt, you buy Bill's shirt, you wear it, and then Bill comes to the show and goes, they get me. Well, I believe that it can be taken further than that. We're at a point where artists subsist on Patreons. Everything's crowdfunded. I mean, people will throw up a GoFundMe just, you know, to get a six-pack at this point. And I believe if you're going to trust them to finance your art, which could be good or bad, and sort of turns the inverse of making music despite poverty into making music to combat poverty, well, you should trust them with their ideas. And at one point, I was raising money for an album. I forget if it was Normal Bias or Popular Music, but one of the tier levels, you could tell me what you wanted me to write a song about, and I would do it. And I was more than happy to do it, because I hadn't done much of that at the time. It was more like a highly paid exercise for me. And it ended up being, for this particular track, Trench from Nerdy Show that had done that. And I didn't know him that well. I think he was just a fan of Nerdy Show and not terribly involved with Nerdy Show at the time.
Yeah, he became Nerdy Show's community manager, but he was just a fan at this point.
His suggestion was something about not letting go of childhood dreams, and that, you know, when he was a kid, he'd always wanted a giant robot. Well, that resonated with me, because there's some days where I'm going to do a show or an appearance, or going to do just some Mark with a C work, but I want to go do something else. Some days it does feel like going to work because I've been doing it for so long. But then I think back to what would 5-year-old me think? Say today, now I'm happy to be here, but what if I wasn't? What if on the way here, I'd been going, I really want to go do all this other stuff. I want to go do all this fun stuff. I want to go to the movies. I want to go shop at the M&M store or something. That's the moment where I think back and go, what would 5-year-old Mark think about me thinking that now? Because all 5-year-old Mark wanted to do was play songs and do all the stuff that comes with playing songs for a living. And then it helps me put it in perspective, and then I'm happy to be wherever I am as long as I'm getting to show off what I made. So Where's My Giant Robot? I don't really think about Trench's want for, you know, some mecha stuff at his disposal at all times. When I sing it, I think about how lucky I am to actually have what I wanted when I grew up.
The whole sound of the song is slightly different, in my opinion anyway, to anything you've done before.
It's not that different from the demo that I sent Trench. It's just slightly better produced. But it was around the time that I had done the theme to Nerdy Show's How I Met Your Mothra. And I was digging just playing with 80s sounding keyboards. And I think I had put those on to make like a simple sound, like, you know, I'm a simple person. I go out every Sunday and I garden and I go to pancake supper at my church. I was trying to go for that very simple person approach sound and build to something else. And I think I had intended to put guitar in it. And when I got to a certain point where on the original demo, my daughter sings the harmonies with me. I went, this really just doesn't need anything else. This is fine on its own. I kind of like it being sparse. Because when it's sparse, you're going, well, it seems like there should be something else here. And, well, that's exactly what the narrator of the song's doing. And far too often, people confuse that if I, Mark, sing the pronoun I, that I mean me. And the song is not about me. It is not from my perspective. It is from the perspective of someone who has a garden full of Miracle-Gro and friendly neighbors that talk about religion and cats and wants a giant robot. I am none of those things. We don't have a garden. We could. We have space for a garden, but we instead put a bunch of shiny rocks there because it was easier to maintain.
And actually, if you're curious about what that demo sounds like, Trench was kind enough to share that with us on an episode of Nerdy Show we put out last year. Nerdy Show episode 231, Giant Robot Gladiators, where we interviewed Megabots, the guys who are actively pursuing a real-life giant robot battle. They've built their own giant robot, and they are going to battle the giant robot of Japan. Hypothetically, this year, word's still out on when and where that's going to happen, but if it's in our power, Nerdy Show will be there on site covering the battle.
Wow. And actually, that episode that you brought up had a lot to do with that song making the record, because I had a bit of a glut of material while I was whittling down, and it was certainly intended to be recorded for the record. I wasn't sure that it was going to make it. But right when you had released that, people were asking me where they could get the song. And because Trench had paid so much to have me write it, I didn't really feel right about doing anything with that recording of it. So with people saying, where can I get Where's My Giant Robot? I went, next record. And figured we'll shoehorn it in there somewhere. And I think it works quite nicely where it's at. But you are correct in it having a different tone. There are five or less songs that don't have any guitar on it in my catalog, and this is one of them, and points to you if you can find the others. You'd be very surprised at one of them.
Well, if you can find them, post them on this episode's page. Now, this takes us to the final two tracks of the record. And they kind of go together.
Yeah, they take up a lot of real estate on this album.
Yeah, it's Falling Sometimes Down, followed by Long Distance Dedication. Man, Mark, these have a very different sound to them as well. And Falling Sometimes Down, I think, is a standout in your entire library in that, you know, the lyrics are there. They're good lyrics. But it's more about what you're doing musically than with the lyrics, because usually the lyrics are the focal point of your tracks. I cannot, again, pinpoint exactly the direction. I can only draw my own personal conclusions, which I really have yet to. So what can you tell us about this song cycle, I guess, of these two tracks?
I can't tell you much till we've finished the album. But I will tell you that Falling Sometimes Down, I wrote probably when I was 17.
Whoa.
Yeah, it far predates any Mark with a C material. Now, that's not to say that there wasn't some spit shining. It wasn't ever really finished at the time. You know, like anybody else who still plays guitar at my age and does it in front of people, I had crappy teenage groups. And this was one of a bevy of songs that I brought to them that they didn't like. And it always stuck around because I thought it was pretty and pastoral and it had more potential than it could have had that band that didn't really like it tried it. So I was just waiting for the right time, and this seemed as good a time as any. So with the initial nature of recording so much and throwing it all against the wall, I was really enamored with Falling Sometimes Down, and I am just the worst lead guitarist on the planet. I'm fine at rhythms, I'm fine at textures, I'm okay with playing a simple melody, but to play a solo, I'm dreadful at it. Every solo you've ever heard on a Mark with a C record has been a product of me sitting, trying again, pressing stop, erasing, going again. Usually the solos take more time than anything else on the record because I am just not built to play solos. And the solo on Falling Sometimes Down, though not the greatest solo in the entire world, is the one and only solo that's ever made a Mark with a C record after only one take. So I was definitely in the right headspace for it. And the lyrics do somewhat matter to me. They shouldn't to anyone else. But
I'm not saying they don't.
This is definitely one you can apply your own meaning to, for sure. I mean, everyone's had a day where they didn't feel like they had lived up to their full potential, and is a good song for those days. One of my biggest intentions with the song was to make the lead instrument not necessarily obvious and not a common lead instrument. So the most melodic thing besides my voice in the song, because there's really only about two chords in the song, they're bizarre chords, but there's really only like two, is the drums. The drums are the melody. I mean, they are a beat, but it's a melody being played on toms, and it's the most striking melody in the song. So after you listen like the 15th or 16th time, that starts appearing, and it's like a reward for sticking around, you know?
So Mark, this final track, Long Distance Dedication, it's quite the journey. What's the story here?
Long Distance Dedication is almost, but not quite, as old as Falling Sometimes Down. When I was thinking about bringing it onto a record, at the time, I was known, I think, rather errantly as a comedy musician, and it's a tag that's hung around for a long time for me. I wouldn't say that it upsets me because, well, at least people are listening and making some kind of opinion, but there are certainly times where I'm happy that you smile or that you laugh, but humor is just one of the many emotions, one of the many feelings that one can have. And I showed that to a very close friend of mine, Long Distance Dedication, and it was the first time that she took me seriously. And it made me feel really good because it felt like, oh, okay, good, not everybody in the world thinks that I'm just here to write punchlines, which I never was. You know, there's not a single record where it's just joke, joke, joke. They don't exist in my catalog. I don't know what albums people are listening to that say Mark with a C on it to get that, but either way. It follows Falling Sometimes Down because now I'm going to say something that I haven't said anywhere else. Once you've gotten here, as this song appeared on an earlier EP of mine in an updated manner, because I always thought that there was more that could be done with it than the limited resources for recording that I had at the time that I first recorded it, you're actually listening to my career in reverse. You have gone to my earliest days as a songwriter if you get to the end. You play the record in reverse order, and you're hearing the biography of Mark with a C, the recording artist.
It's kind of like the David Bowie Nothing Has Changed compilation.
Somewhat. Wasn't intentional, though. I didn't realize it till the end. It's like, oh, wow, that's exactly what I've just done here. I mean, it's not a story of my life or anything, but every phase that I've gone through, they're all sort of touched on in a way.
That's pretty neat, man. That's pretty neat. Now, you said at the top of this listening party that you were considering making a white album scope record of all kinds of different things that didn't really have any cohesion together, and you trimmed it down. Is that why there are so many oddball tracks that come from different origin points, or that in this case of the last two tracks that are so old? You're not a stranger to refining older material and putting them on your records. You did that with the last one as well. Were you just digging through everything to figure out what this throwing it all against the wall was going to look like, and that's why there's earlier tracks on here? Or
no, there wasn't any digging. I was just kind of sitting and making a list of songs that either hadn't been finished, you know, from demos that had been done recently, or songs that I thought could use sprucing up. And I didn't know if they would make the record or not. It was at the end, if they're good enough, they'll make the record. And it could have been a double record, but I don't know that it would have been as enjoyable. It would have definitely been pretentious. Like, it wouldn't have, I would not have taken the listener into consideration at all. But ultimately, popular music was a record for you. And Exactly Where I Am was a record for me. And I wanted Unicorns Get More Bacon to be a record for us. Something that both you and I, whoever you happens to be, could listen to and go, yeah, that's Mark with a C in 2016. And if I'm going to be a champion of the old guard, then I can't forget where I came from either. And I'm certainly in future releases going to be paying more attention to my roots than I have been maybe on more recent records. Not to be super mysterious, I plan to take more inspiration from where I had been, because I think we all go through periods in our 20s where we try to completely eschew where we've been. We try to go, no, this is who I am now. But they're all building blocks. They're all just building blocks, and it's just a matter of how you stack them and what pretty colors you make out of them. But also with Falling Sometimes Down and Long Distance Dedication being at the end, I really wanted you to end at a completely different feeling than you began with. So the next time you play Unicorns Get More Bacon, it is not at all the experience you remember. You start in a very peppy, up-tempo manner. I didn't want questions to be answered at the end, you know? Some things are a little too cyclical. I just wanted to end in a very different spot.
And you really, really did. It's very different. And it's a great song cycle. I love the way the two go together. And you can tell there's something different about them. And it's exciting because, I mean, for you, it's an older Mark with a C sound, I guess. But for me, it's a newer Mark with a C sound.
Well, those older songs had never been recorded like that.
Right.
So this was old makes new. What would I do with older material that had been discarded? What could 2015, when I recorded it, Mark, do with 17-year-old or 21-year-old Mark? When I first started working on it, a longtime friend had asked me, well, what are you going to do with this record? You always seem to have an idea when you start. I said, I want to make a record that's the amassed knowledge of everything that I've learned at this age. And that was why I thought it would take a double record. But it turns out that I don't really know much, and it only took 45 minutes. But it's got a pretty good smattering of everything that really matters to me. There's influence from my daughter, where I've spent a lot of my life trying to influence my daughter, and now my daughter's influencing my direction, which is great, and the way that it should go. My family, you know, my wife is in there. My bunnies are in there. Meatwad can be heard barking in the background on some tracks.
Really?
Yeah, well, mostly he just cooperated by not barking all the time. So it's really the amassed knowledge of everything I've learned up till now with my skill set. And it turns out that I hit a point in the production where I realized that I needed someone else to master the record. And I was lucky enough to get Kramer to master it, who has done records by Ween. He discovered the band Low, which, oh my God, thank God he did. That's one of my favorite bands of all time. And the Butthole Surfers, he was in that group for a while. He was in Shockabilly. 30-year-old Mark would have had too much pride to see if he could be hired. But now 38-year-old Mark is very happy to pass the baton to those who can do better with my material than I can.
I'm wondering, production-wise, if you listen to early Mark with the C albums, the production has changed over the years. How much of that has been influenced by having the backing band and knowing that these songs can be played a certain way when they're live?
If you'd asked me that on any of the records prior to this, that prominently feature guitar, bass, and drums, like pretty much almost all of the records since Pop, Pop, Pop do, I would have said not at all. In the case of this record, I really wanted to make the record with the band that I'm using live right now, which is Emmett Dobbin and Jim Myers. I really wanted them to be on the record, and due to scheduling, it was not just improbable, it was impossible. It couldn't work. So I was writing really simplistic versions of backing parts that Jim and Emmett could feel free to explore and make bigger and louder and cooler live. Because to try to play in their style would be such a slap in the face to them. I mean, they're so good in their own right. Jim is the one drummer I've ever met that you can say, play quieter. And he can do that. And he won't lose tempo. He doesn't lose groove. He's a monster when it comes to the drums. He has such an understanding of dynamics. And I don't. I'm totally club-fisted when I play the drums. Emmett, he's a younger guy. He's just freshly 22. And he hasn't been playing bass for more than, I don't know, 6 years or so, and he can outplay any bass player I know. Any of them. I will take the Pepsi challenge. I will take him bar to bar over the top style. And, okay, maybe I'm putting too much pressure on Emmett, but I certainly was a little more fearless in tracking the record because I knew that almost all of the songs had the capability of being performed live. However, my daughter's in the middle of learning how to play piano. And we won't be doing Where's My Giant Robot live until my daughter has perfected it. And then she will perform it.
That's neat.
So please do not come to my shows and request Where's My Giant Robot, because that's the bargain that we have struck. If she learns the keyboard part properly and can come to the show and play it, then we start playing Where's My Giant Robot.
That's neat.
It's good to have goals, right? I'd also, while I've got this forum, I want to say thank you to Tim Labonte, who made the fantastic video for the title track, and Catherine Miller, who finished the layout. She had that drawing, that illustration that my daughter Juliana had made, and I handed that to her and said, okay, it needs more artwork. Go nuts. And she did just that. And she was like, look, I really want to make it look like Lisa Frank just threw up all over this record. And I said, do your thing, because I think that the most important thing that one can do with hiring a creative person is not tell them what to do. You hire them because you like what they do, and then say, go forth and be creative, and you get the hell out of their way. If you do that, you're going to come up with something way better than Catholic school style, wrist against the knuckles, the king beheading someone because the song that they had ordered does not sound the way that the king deemed fit. No, I've been happier just letting people do what they do and pleasantly surprise me that it's better than what I might have envisioned in my head. Cap here, I'd given him a somewhat rigid set of instructions for what I wanted done with the popular music art. When it came time to do those graphs that are on the inside that break down the crowdsourced information that was turned into songs is my favorite part of it, because that was where you went and you were creative and you came up with different shapes for all the graphs. And that's when I realized, man, I really shouldn't have given you such a rigid set of rules, because you're so much better when you're just allowed to be creative. And that influenced my future working with outside artists. I just find that it's better that if someone's creative, if you just let them do what they do, you're going to walk away happier. You know, unless you're Billy Corgan. He will not be happier.
So that's it for the record. If you listen to all this and you don't have the record yet, there's only one thing to do. Go to markwithc.com and go get this album.
You got to get the vinyl version, because one day you will have a record player, no matter who you are. You will be around a record player, and you're going to be really sad that you don't have Unicorns Get More Bacon and that you don't get to take the inner sleeve out and look at Cool Skateboard Dog. Lauren has the CD copy, and she's never seen Cool Skateboard Dog.
Lauren currently has the CD copy. Lauren will probably buy the vinyl copy.
Because you're missing out on Cool Skateboard Dog.
Yep.
Not to be confused with Cap's creation, Cool Boner Dog.
They're similar, but different.
Very, very different.
They run in the same circles.
Well, of course, they're cool dogs.
Yeah. Stay tuned next week for your regularly scheduled pop culture deluge here on Nerdy Show. And if you dig these nerdy tunes, then you've got to check out Nerdy.fm, our nerd music radio station playing the best nerd music in every genre, streaming online and via the Nerdy FM app. We're adding new music all the time, and no doubt some future listening parties, probably some future listening parties for other Mark with a C releases in the future.
I don't know. I've been thinking about, you know, moving more into the novel territory.
Look forward to dramatic audio readings of Mark with a C's novels, such as The Adventures of Cool Skateboard Dog.
The Adventures of Cool Boner Dog's coming way before that.
Is he now?
Boy, do I know how to turn a phrase. Dick.
Thank you so much for joining us in this marathon exploration of Unicorns Get More Bacon. Remember, if you dig Nerdy FM, well, you should totally tell a friend. If you're not listening to us on the Nerdy FM app, there is a Nerdy FM app for easy, convenient listening. And get this, more people can discover Nerdy FM if you rate and review our app. The easiest way to do that? Well, we've got a whole webpage dedicated to making it simple to rate and review Nerdy Show Network stuff. Just go to nerdyshow.com/spread the word, and you'll find links to all our respective iTunes pages where some of our shows and this app, for example, are woefully underrated and reviewed. It's easy to do. Just click a 5-star rating, and if you have the time, throw some words on the page.
Or a 4-star rating. You know, if we've got room for improvement, we can take it.
Yeah, it's true. We will take it. But you know, 5 stars, come on. Come on.
Yeah, why are you being so prideful about that last star? Don't you want Nerdy FM to eat? What has Nerdy FM's children ever done to you?
Not a damn thing, that's what. They're good kids. Anyhow, thank you again for listening.
And thank you guys for having me. This is fantastic.
Be sure to check out Unicorns Get More Bacon at markwithac.com. Get the vinyl, get the extra treasures, experience it all, and then relive this beautiful moment here.
Roll around in it. Cuddle with it. Take selfies of yourself with it.
To fill your daily quota, of course.
Well, of course.
Thank you so much for listening. Bye, I'm Cap.
And I'm Lauren.
Bye, I've been Mark with a C, and I'll probably continue to be.
Taking us out is one of those early Mark with a C tracks. This is Falling Sometimes Down. See you next time.
I'm sorry that I wasn't there. I'm sober here, I'm so burned out, and the trust falls away once again. But falling sometimes down, it would help if you've been there before. You know that we need help and more. Accepting that I'm fallible and I'm falling sometimes down. Falling sometimes down. Oh,
Thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes or like and follow us on SoundCloud. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. You can subscribe to Nerdy Show via iTunes and SoundCloud. Leave a comment, like and share, and follow Nerdy Show on all your favorite social networks. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com. If it's geeky, we got it covered.
Irv.